tread on me. The time has come, gonna take a stand. Spread these words all across the land, from sea to sea. Don't tread on me. So tell your neighbors, tell all your friends, gonna see that eagle flying high again. You better believe, don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible, don't tread on my guns, don't you tread on my freedom, God's only son. Don't tread on me, don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free, and I'll dance your fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Yeah, I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me.
Hey everybody, welcome back into the show. This is the second hour of Your Defending Fathers with Trucker Randy Bishop here on the Patriot Voice Radio Network. As usual, joining us during the second hour, Pastor Rusty Chatfield with a history lesson. And today, interesting topic, timing kind of interesting, Tucker Carlson's interview of Vladimir Putin and his grocery shopping. I don't know if Pastor knows about that, but we'll talk about it. But he's got a brief overview of the history of Russia. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. No, I'm covering this because I need to cover something. I've never really talked about the history of Russia. And not that I'm an expert. When I was at Central Michigan, I took a class for a master's program, just a semester's class, history of Russia. Hey, it's an old country. And there's a lot to know. Okay, first of all, let me just say this: when Noah got off the ark, he had he had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Okay, Shem would be the from Shem, the Jewish people came, the Arab people came. From Ham moved east and south. We think this is we think. Possibly to Africa, and or the descendants of Ham went eastward. Japheth, so I'm told, went north and west. Generally speaking, Europeans are descended from the sons of Japheth. In a sense, who cares, right? But just so you know, Bible scholars will do that. Russia is mentioned in the Bible as Gog and Magog. Okay, Gog, Russia, Magog, Moscow. And so it's got, and there's a lot of, from Ezekiel chapter 38, from the book of Revelation, Russia is mentioned in prophecy, just so you know. Now, there is some disagreements on what I just said. Some people, Randy, I'm what you'd call premillennialist. I take the Bible literally, and I believe that the Jesus Christ is coming back, and there's going to be a literal a seven-year tribulation period, and that we can pick up the Bible and read it, and there are things that are going to happen, and Russia is a part of that. Now, I'm not too dogmatic on all these things, because there's some Christians that say, oh, no. You can't, they look at the prophecies in the Bible, and sometimes some people actually believe that everything written in the book of Revelation has already been fulfilled. You know, I do not believe that. No, we see things happening in the Bible that it fit what we see happening here on Earth, mostly the move toward global government, which 30, 40 years ago was a gigantic conspiracy. If I was to get on your radio program, talk about the move toward global government, people say, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. No, you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist. You just got to read. There is a movement toward global government. That
just,
is true.
Just connect the dots.
It's nobody's hiding that anymore.
No, you can't, no.
Yeah. So that is the way that is. So Russia will play a part in that. I do believe that Russia also in the book of Ezekiel will be the kings of the north, the king of the north. Because if you look at a map, what's straight north of Israel is Russia. All right. All that said, let me go backward. Where does the name Russia come from? The origins of Russia, generally, we would say they're Eastern Slavs, S-L-A-V-S, the Slavic nations. It is a Slavic nation with a Slavic language. It was in Eastern Europe. Here's the thing with Russia for its entire existence. Does it identify more with Europe or does it identify more with Asia? That is a struggle that they've struggled with for centuries. Do we count? And they've always struggled with that. And so that is the way that is. There was a Viking tribe that invaded it and called it the land of Rus or Russia. That's where we get it. That's where we get the name Russia, land of Rus.
Got it. Very good. Perfect spot for a break. I'm Trucker Randy Bishop. He's Pastor Rusty Chatfield. We're your defending fathers. We'll be right back.
Take out the paper. Little Traverse Disposal in Harbor Springs supports this radio station, and we would like you to support them. Little Traverse Disposal is locally owned with hardworking guys that provide professional trash disposal for your home or business. You're already spending the money. Why not support a Northern Michigan-owned company who supports us? So call them today at 231-487-0780. Again, 231-487-0780.
Hey Patriots, Veteran John here in Sheboygan. Taste the purest artesian water on God's green earth. MAGA water. PFAS-free, mineral-rich, naturally alkaline, 8.3 pH, veteran-owned. Go to MAGAwater.com or call 231-818-9700. That's MAGAwater.com or call 231-818-9700. Call us today to taste the pure difference.
My name is Todd Spalper. I'm running to be your state representative in the 106th District. One of the reasons that I am running is because our current public education system is failing our children. I support real, common sense policies and approaches to education and the safety of our children. All parents have a right to decide on their children's education, not the government or unions. I will fight to ensure that. After all, they are our most precious resources we have, and they are worth the fight. Vote for me, Todd Smallenberg, electsmallenberg.com. Paid for by Todd Smallenberg for state rep.
Next time you need tires for your car, don't compromise. Michelin Passenger Tires strive to deliver outstanding safety, long tread life, and excellent fuel efficiency. Plus, they're famous for delivering a quiet, comfortable ride and precision handling to help ensure optimum safety for you and your passengers. Outfit your car with tires that deliver everything. Ask about Michelin Tires. Royal Tire and Petoskey has the right set of Michelin tires for whatever you drive. Stop in and see us today. Specific performance may vary by tire model.
Hi, this is Ian Murphy from the Iron Pig Smokehouse in downtown Gaylord. Join me every Tuesday at 10 a.m. with Trucker Randy for an update on all things happening at the Iron Pig. We're open 7 days a week and serving breakfast Saturdays and Sundays. You can order online anytime for takeout, curbside, and delivery at ironpigsmoke.com. And be sure to keep up with our legal battle against the health department by subscribing to our podcast at fuelcasttv.com.
Hey Patriots, this is the boss of Veteran John, his wife Jamie in Sheboygan. Taste the purest artesian water on God's green earth, MAGA water. PFAS-free, mineral-rich, naturally alkaline, 8.3 pH, and veteran-owned. Go to MAGAwater.com or call 231-818-9700. That's MAGAwater.com or call 231-818-9700. Call us today to taste the pure difference.
Hey, everybody, welcome back into the show. Second segment of our history lesson discussion brought to you by MAGA Water over there in Sheboygan. It's funny, I made my hotel room coffee this morning, Pastor Chatfield, with MAGA Water. And man, it tastes great. I didn't use the chlorine water they have here in the hotel. And man, it really makes a difference. So greatly appreciate them being a new sponsor. And in talking about Russia. And there's one other text message I got that questions, where was the term and where was the geographical area of the, was it a country or a territory called Prussia with a P? What's the difference that between the two?
That's a part of Germany. The Prussia would be the leading, most dominant province of the old German Confederation. Before 1870, Germany was, you know, you had a German Confederation. Different sections of Germany were tied loosely together. Germany didn't become a nation until 1870 under Otto von Bismarck, who really united Germany. And that's why, by the way, when we move into World War I and World War II, Germany really had strong nationalism, because they were just – they wanted to flex their muscles, because they really were never a united country before. They were always a part of something bigger. Before the German Confederation, there was something called the Holy Roman Empire throughout the Middle Ages. They were part of something, but they weren't just German. And people like Adolf Hitler, who was an Austrian, born in Austria, he was very pro-Germany in extreme nationalism, extremist, which made him a fascist. And he wasn't in the Nazis. Okay. Now, Russia, here was a point I was going to make later, but I'll make it right now because you made me. Even though Russia in 1917, the Bolshevik Revolution, they become a communist country, and I'll talk about this a little bit later. Communism is not nationalistic by definition. If you're a communist, you're supposed to not care about a family. You're not supposed to care about nation. The only thing you care about is class warfare. That's all you care about, because according to Marx, the history of the world is the history of the haves oppressing the have-nots. That's all it is. And so the last line of the Communist Manifesto is, workers of the world, unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains. See, communism, theoretically, Marxism, doesn't care about borders, race, or any of that. Whereas Nazism, fascism does. I mean, it is extremely nationalistic. But here's the irony of this. When during World War II, when the Germans invaded Russia, and they called that the Barbarossa. That was the code name of Hitler's plan to invade Russia after he kind of gave up on forcing Great Britain to submit. That's when Stalin says, you got to die for the motherland. I mean, he promoted what true communists wouldn't promote. A true communist only cares about your class. That's all they care about. See, in the end, there's no true communists. They're just another form of tyranny. Nobody really completely believes that. And I'll maybe if I have time, I'll get to that a little bit later. All right. So, but somebody we've never talked about on your program, a guy named Genghis Khan, who was a Mongol, and in the what were the years here? Oh, about 1100 A.D. He basically being the world's greatest conqueror. And if he was from Mongolia, a place in between China and Russia, and he conquered all of China. The Mongols controlled China, controlled Russia. A huge Genghis Khan, a huge empire. And so for 250 years, the Mongols controlled Russia, and they were just subservient. But eventually, a man that we would call by 1480, a man named Ivan III, who was the Prince of Moscow, or sometimes called Ivan the Great, he was ultimately to organize and to expel the Mongols from Russia, and he became the first true leader of United Russia. He's called Ivan III. After him came somebody called Ivan IV or Ivan the Terrible. He was the grandson. And he was he took the title Tsar, and so he was known as a tyrant, and he was extremely cruel. And as Europe was moving out of feudalism, feudalism is a economic system in which people are tied to the land. During the Middle Ages, in almost all of Europe, you had feudalism. You had lords, you had serfs, manors, knights. You get the whole picture of feudalism. And if you were a peasant, you had nothing. You were tied to your land. But that started to end in Britain and in France and when the Renaissance came in about 1500, and then the Protestant Reformation. I mean, and freedom started to grow, the growth of Parliament in England, and the declining power of some of the monarchs in England. They were beginning to be restricted. You heard us talk about the Magna Carta of 1250, which the nobles of Britain forced upon King John, say, look, John, you got to at least follow your own rules. You got no man is above the law. And so while Western Europe is coming out of this feudalistic system, Ivan the Terrible, he imposes it, feudalism, on them when the rest of Europe was going the other direction. So Russia was embraced it. And so by the 16, 1700s, Russia was had the least amount of freedom of virtually any place on the face of the earth. In 1613, there was the last of the Russian Tsar dynasties. Lasted 300 years. It's called the Romanov dynasty. As we talk about dynasties, these are families that rule the country. So the Romanovs ruled them for about 300 years. Some of the greatest one was a man named Peter the Great, ruled from 1689 to 1725. And he expanded Russia and he expanded his own power. 'Tis true. The Russian Empress Catherine the Great, a woman, she turned westward. In other words, she tried to educate herself and make Russia a little less free. But, what happened in France with the French Revolution, what happened in America scared her. She wanted to retain her power. So Alexander the First, the early part of the 19th century, expanded Russia again. And so Russia has a despot ruled them. while Europe is coming out of it, Russia is not coming out of it. And the last of the Romanovs was Nicholas II, the beginning of the 20th century. He's the guy that's the unhappy. It's like musical chairs. When the music stops or when you pass a beanbag, you're the guy without a chair. So what's happening is there's lots of new ideas coming into Russia. 1845 is when Karl Marx wrote the Communist Manifesto, and a lot of those ideas were coming into Russia in the early part of the 20th century. The Russians had a disastrous war in 1905 with Japan. It's called the Russo-Japanese War, in which Japan defeated the Russians. And so they were humiliated. Now, when World War I begins, Russia, Britain, and France are called the Triple Entente. They're aligned with each other. And then you have Germany, Austria-Hungary, Italy, Turkey, especially we'll call it Italy, but Turkey, the Ottomans, which we were called at the time, the Ottoman Empire, were aligned. There was two sets of alliances in Europe before World War I. It is said that before World War I, Europe was a powder keg. Archduke Francis Ferdinand of Austria was assassinated by a Serbian dissident, and that started the war. Serbia was aligned with Russia. Austria-Hungary was aligned with Germany. And so every country in Europe was aligned with one side or the other, and that's what brought us into World War I.
Now I'm going to stop you on that point as I'm listening and picturing the history in my head as you're describing this. And I've always thought about this and questioned it, and I never really got a clear understanding of it. How is it that the United States, how did we get involved in World War I?
Okay. Well, one, let me just say this. in George Washington's farewell address that we would have no entangling, no permanent alliances with any portion of the foreign world. That's what.
Right.
That's exactly what Washington said. And that document, his farewell address, was read and still is read like every year in the United States Senate. It was a guiding principle of the United States. We're not going to get involved in European wars, other people's conflicts. We're not going to do that. We're not going to align ourselves. So that was our policy. That was our policy. But with the rise of the progressives and the split of the Republican Party, Woodrow Wilson was elected in 1912, and he was the first internationalist president. What do you mean, internationalist? Was he a bad man? I'm not saying he was that bad, but he viewed America as the leader of the world. He wanted to take our ideas of freedom and push them around the world. And we were drawn into the war with the slogan, make the world safe for democracy. The war to end all wars. Now, there are a bunch of things that happened. The sinking of the Lusitania was a British luxury liner, and a lot of Americans were killed. It upset us. Worse than that was the German practice of sinking merchant vessels without warning. During the war, Britain had such mastery of the seas. The only thing that Germany could do, their advantage was their submarines, their U-boats, Unterboots, they call them. Anyway, that's what they had. And so we were trading with Britain, and they didn't want us to trade with Britain. Now, let me just stop and tie this into Russia here. So Russia, the Germans are fighting in two fronts, the Russian front, Eastern front, and the Western front. Now, in the early 1900s, there's this communist movement in Russia. Vladimir Lenin he's the leader of the Russian movement. He's in Germany. He talks with the Germans, and basically he says, look, help me. And the Germans did help with the – and I'll tell you why. Help me promote a communist revolution, and if I get power, first thing I will do is I will pull Russia out of this war. World War I was – known at that time as the Great War. Obviously, it wasn't known as World War I. It was called the Great War. So there's this revolution. And let me just tell you about the revolution briefly, too. It didn't start off just like the French Revolution. It didn't start off with the Bolsheviks, the communists, having any sort of majority. They never had a majority. It started off as a Republican rebellion against the Romanov family. But as does happen in revolutions, once you overthrow the existing order, things start happening that nobody knows, that nobody could have predicted. And so Russia's all involved in World War One. Eventually, they have this revolution, and Nicholas II is deposed, and you have a Republican form of government. A man named Alexander Kerensky, who is leads the Russian Revolution. And he's kind of a moderate. He sets up a provisional government. But once you overthrow the existing order, this revolution, it gets out of control. Eventually, Vladimir Lenin seizes power, seizes control of the Russian Revolution, and it moves way left. And his group were known as like the Mensheviks, and the other group were called the Bolsheviks. And they strive for power. In the end, the Bolsheviks, the communists, take control, and it becomes known as the Communist Revolution.
Got it. Perfect spot for a break. Bottom of the hour news. We'll be right back.